rolling, Bob?
ビッグツリーオブマロン、マロン、アンダーザビッグチェスナッツ、チェスナッツ、チェスナッツ、チェスナッツ、チェスナッツ、アンダーザビッグチェスナッツ、You and me,
I, we,
Japanese homework, it's friendly.
Good morning. Pardon the noise in the background. I'm sitting on the deck, which connects to the dining hall. And if you hear any sounds in the background, it is Chinese, because this particular camp is owned by a Chinese owner, based out of Hamilton, Ontario, and brings large groups from Beijing, Shanghai, and others, hundreds of kids who don't speak English, don't behave well. And then there are our girls who are the gift to this place. The staff love them. They are so well behaved and so polite. And, of course, our biggest problem is keeping them speaking English when they're walking together, because it's natural to slip into Japanese to share your experiences, and we're saying, no, 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 no. I gave the old talk last night. I thought it was an excellent speech myself, but I don't think it registered. About how language creates a wall between people, and if they continue to speak Japanese to each other, it keeps the Canadian counselors outside their circle. It won't allow them in. It creates an artificial barrier. And that's very sad, because we're trying to be all together as one. So I spout my philosophy, then I stay up late with the teachers up till midnight with wine and beer, talking. Religion, philosophy, marriage, culture, and it's a tradition that goes back from the beginning of the time of coming to this camp. After the students have gone to bed, teachers sit in the room, I bring up the wine, I bring up the portable bar, and we just talk. And it's kind of interesting, because even though both the teachers are from the same school, both Japanese, there are many, many things they have never revealed about themselves to each other. Just there's just no time at school, and Japanese lives are extremely private. So when one of them found out last night that the other one belonged to a certain religion, it was a kind of a shock, and it created a whole new dynamic. So it's very, very interesting, and I just love to have the opportunity to almost become the Scarborough dude, a little polite version of, but, you know, spouting my philosophy, talking some of my experiences, and just sharing this time together, it's really wonderful. Anyway, where I am right now on the deck, I've bought out a chair. Breakfast is just over. Wonderful breakfast, like, you know, boiled eggs, waffles, hash browns, yogurt, fruit, coffee. So I brought out a chair and my coffee, and I'm sitting on the deck here looking at a spot that I've declared kind of magic. I just decided that yesterday. Every year I come here, I take pictures. There are three We call voyageur canoes, the long canoes. They'll hold a dozen people easily. And they're tied up on the wharf, and there's three of them, and they're painted sort of with Aboriginal logos on the front. And there's something absolutely perfect about the view. It's the three. It wouldn't work with the two. There's something magic about the three. You can feel it's a bit of a, it's a breeze today. It's, the water is a bit choppy. But they're sitting there, no matter what the day is. Sometimes the lake is perfectly still and they're there. Now they're putting up with the waves, and I take pictures of them, but in particular, from this spot, up on the balcony, looking down at them, with the overhanging, there are giant pine trees surrounding the this dining hall, and with the branches hanging down sort of in front, it makes the most amazing picture. Maybe I'll post it on this podcast, if I at all remember. Probably won't. It's just such a beautiful sight, and it never ceases to stun me. It's like visiting the Buddha in Kamakura, where these girls come from, the big Buddha. I have to go every time. And every time I come to this particular lake, this leadership center, which some people have been to before and are aware of because I checked in on Foursquare. I believe I'm now the mayor. If you follow me on Foursquare, you'll know where I am. Otherwise, I'm not telling. It's a tradition never to give the name of this particular lake. Doesn't really matter one way or the other. But the magic of looking at these three boats sitting there, it's just a wonderful, wonderful feeling. And I thought I'd share that with you this morning as I begin perhaps another podcast, which I don't know when I'm going to be able to put out because I didn't bring a computer with me. And it's a little tricky. I don't think I can do it on the iPad, even with what I've got. Oh, who knows? You know, if I we'll see. In the end, again, it probably won't matter a whole lot. Anyway, I got to get back. I've got to drop off the girls I've written. Must have like 60 postcards to Japan that the girls I've written to family and friends and teachers that I've got to bring to the office. I have to pay for our stay here. And then I've got to get back for 9 o'clock. We're having an in-class ecology session. The staff here, we've worked out a beautiful program, including archery, canoeing, trust exercises, orienteering, low rope, high ropes, you know, with the harnesses and helmets and climbing to the top. And every single girl does it every single year without fail, no matter how frightened they are. Just absolutely wonderful. I just can't tell you how wonderful it is working with Japanese people. And for those of you, I don't think, again, I could never, the non-listeners would be ignorant. You, of course, my listeners, understand the difference between Japanese and Chinese. And there is a world of difference. Not that I want to, you know, promote any stereotypes or anything else, but it is a pleasure working with people who try their best to be civilized, polite, and follow the rules. The staff here absolutely love it. We have a new director here. He and I have already become chums. And there's one more thing. I've been giving myself an awful lot of credit for this whole thing. Like, this is my doing. Like, I stand back. Last night, for example, sitting around the campfire, we half the group paddled out to this beach, and the rest of us hiked. And you end up on this beautiful sandy beach where we sometimes play volleyball or swim. But last night was a campfire, and the staff teaches absolutely crazy songs, some of which you might hear in the background. Just zany songs to make funny noises and make funny faces and shake your body all around. And the girls just love it. And I stand back at a distance, and I hear the girls laughing, and I see them moving to these crazy lyrics. And it's so close to making me cry, like, you know, in that wonderful, nice way of, isn't this a beautiful experience? Isn't this wonderful to have these? Last night, there were four Canadian staff members who really, really wanted to work with this group. They love them. They know when they're coming up. They ask. They jostle for position. Who gets to work with Ken's group? And so there's tremendous, there's a wonderful feeling of this is good, this is happy, this is what life should be about. There should be more joy, you know? And there's another sense of my ego swelling a little bit, thinking, hey, this is my doing. These girls are here because of me. But in fact, it didn't start that way. I've sort of made my way into this position and sort of took over the reins, but there's no way I could have done this without the help of so many other people in the beginning who knew the camp. I wouldn't have even known this camp, like who booked the camp to start with. All I did was make an arrangement between my parent company in Japan and the East York Board of Education in Toronto and said, let's do a program. And then argued when they were going to send them to the States. I said, no, it has to be Canada-based. So I had my voice in the beginning and was smart enough to go along on the first tour. And then I just held out, and gradually, one by one, people fell out or were gently eased out. And I'm left holding the works, and it's all now my company. And it feels pretty good. But I'm just saying, you know, in case it ever sounds to you like I'm saying, hey, I made this, I did this, I did this. It's true, but not without the help of so many good people. And I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful the way this has evolved. And I'm very excited about next year, thinking of making a little bit special somehow for our 20th anniversary of me starting this business. 20 years to have something going continually, with the exception of the SARS and the H1N1 years. Maybe 2003, 2009, is really, it's an accomplishment, and it's a good thing, and it just continues to get better. And there's always new people on board and new people who care about it, so blah, 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 blah. Okay, last point. I do hear so much on Twitter, on blogs, podcasts, people talking about best business practices and the 10 best things to do and how to win your customers, and you know all the shit that you got, the business crap that's out there that I sometimes glance at, but usually don't. And I want to pat myself on the back to say, hey, man, you're doing all that stuff. And I wish to hell somebody would take me a little more seriously sometime, that when it comes to business, I'm not a businessman. I just don't like the business of business, you know. But I'm doing it. I'm doing everything that has to be done to actually make a profitable venture, but one that's full of spirit and makes a lot of people very, very happy. When I say goodbye to when the girls wave goodbye as the bus pulls out of the school in Toronto, waving goodbye to the host families who are, many of them in tears, he's saying, hey, wow, this is something. So I would like some of those people out there to say, hey, Mr. Scarborough, dude, what are your secrets? How do you make a successful business? And what would I say? Well, let's get a couple of beer and we'll start talking about it. Anyway, that's it for now. I just got to get going. I got things to do, and I'm going to talk to you a little later. Today's the day they do a long hike through the bog, and I'll pass on that one. But I think I'm going to find a quiet spot on a rock and maybe talk to you. So stay tuned. This is the Scarborough Dude from that camp in the middle week of my special summer Canadian study tour. Bye for now. Yeah, it's me. 4 o'clock on a day very well spent. And still spending. It's the afternoon. This would be August 2nd. I'm sitting at a point at this camp I'm at. The flagpole point, whatever it is. Nobody else anywhere near me. Can't even hear people. I've been here for a couple of hours, lying, sleeping on the rocks. You know, these big rocks that come out of lakes, you know. And just perfect to just lie down and doze off. A nice breeze coming off the water. It's cool enough to keep the bugs away. Got some nasty deer fly bites earlier, but they're all gone now. And just having a very, very pleasant, relaxing time. I thought I'd recount some of the day with you. You know, up for breakfast and chat with the teachers. gosh, mark some of their little diaries that they have to keep for this book they produce. And yeah, their fine lunch, giant tacos. And then a really pleasant time spent in the office with the staff that I know here, sort of the general manager of the place. And it doesn't sound typical of something that I would do, but it's something that I thoroughly enjoy. With him, we sort of have this conversation every time I come up of just talking business. And it was really nice about suppliers and contractors and things that I would like to think you would not expect me to enjoy talking about, and I really do. It just sort of, you know how with people, you sort of declare what the boundaries are. I'm not going to talk to him about Scarborough Dude stuff and, you know, deep philosophical discussions, but we'll talk about our families and we'll talk about, just show each other mutual respect. And it's really nice, and it's very important. It's part of the relations I keep with the people here, including a pleasant conversation prior to that with the new director of the camp. And the program manager, and just these conversations, sitting there in their office on a sofa chatting. It was very, very pleasant, and it made me feel, I don't know, not exactly important, but like I belong. Like this is, yeah, I'm the guy in charge of this group. And I'm relating to the people in charge of this camp and on a good level. And on a friendly, pleasant level. And then time out just to lie down here. And now I've got my Timothy Leary book out. Did that make any sense? Do you understand? Why did I even tell you that? It's a different kind of conversation, you know. I guess maybe that's this thing about this job, is I encounter so many different people with every host family, and there are 23 of them this year. Each conversation is going to be different, in a different direction and at different levels. And that just keeps it interesting and fun. Anyway, I've been lying here reading Storming Heaven, LSD and the American Dream by Jay Stevens, which I've told you about before. And I cannot recommend this book enough, if you could ever find it. It's just such in-depth character descriptions of these people. You know, Aldous Huxley and Jack Kerouac and Allen Ginsberg and William Burroughs. And of course now, especially the bulk of the book, Timothy Leary. And now he's just met Richard Alpert, who you may know as Baba Ram Dass or Ram Dass, from a very, very rich family. And how they met at Harvard. But I wanted to read. Leary is just starting. He's not working with LSD. He's working with the manufactured psilocybin that the Sandoz company is providing him with for research. And Harvard at this point is a little bit, seems a little unusual, but he's still working for them. This is 1961. And he's still able to carry on his experiments to see what role these drugs may play in understanding personality. But for Leary, yeah, just referred to the passage here. He's turned on about 50 times in a short period of time, and he's starting to change and has a higher mission. So here's a little passage from the book I'd like to share with you. But since science was still one of Leary's main motivations, he didn't want to know what was happening beyond the... He did want to know what was happening beyond the door in the other world. He had a theory, of course, one that owed equal debts to Huxley, transactional analysis, and the fact that the Harvard Psychology Department, sorry about the wind, had just purchased its first computer, its first artificial mind. From Huxley, he borrowed the reducing valve analogy that had the brain screening out the millions of messages that arrived every second. But from there, he modified Huxley to fit his own theoretical vocabulary. And now this is Leary talking. Let's assume that the cortex, the seat of consciousness, is a million-fold network of neurons, a fantastic computing machine. Cultural learning has imposed a few pitifully small programs on the cortex. These programs may activate perhaps 1/100th of the potential neural connections. All the learned games of life can be seen as programs which select, censor, alert, and thus drastically limit the available cortical response. The consciousness-expanding drugs unplug these narrow programs. They unplug the ego, the game machinery, and the mind, that cluster of game concepts. And with the ego and mind unplugged, what is left? What is left is something Western culture knows little about. The open brain. The uncensored cortex, alert and open to a broad sweep of internal and external stimuli hitherto screened out. So that's Louis's explanation. The book goes on. So if that was theory, then you ask yourself, what would happen if you began to disconnect the game structure of Western culture? What would happen if you began to systematically unplug the egos of America? These were the questions Leary was asking himself. And the answer he arrived at was that whatever happened, it would be for the best. It was time to unplug the old mind of Homo sapiens so a new one could take shape. This was a psilocybin project's hidden agenda. And the odd thing about it was that it seemed to come from a higher level of consciousness, a higher power. Quote, "We began to see ourselves as unwitting agents of a social process that was far too powerful for us to control or more than dimly understand," was the way Leary described the sensation. A historical movement that would inevitably change man at the very center of his nature, his consciousness. They had glimpsed the future, and it was themselves. Now that's pretty powerful. I mean, Leary believed when they discovered all this stuff and started taking these trips and turning on the artists, the intellectuals, and the elite. See, Huxley wanted Tim to keep this very quiet and turn on just the elite, the people, the scientists, the doctors, the Harvard people, and so on. And Leary, after talking with Allen Ginsberg, said, no, the whole Western society is screwed up. We've got to turn on everybody. It's got to be open and democratic. And if there's a few people wasted along the way, so be it. But it's time for us to change mankind. And, of course, that's the beginning of this schism. And that's when, which led to Leary getting tossed out of Harvard. But it's just such a fascinating history. And it bothers me that I don't think enough people are paying attention. This is a rich part of 20th century history. You know, and it gets kind of wasted or washed away with Time Life Warner collections of hits of the 60s, you know, The Loving Spoonful. And yeah, that was just a little bit of the texture. The music was wonderful because it was echoing some of these sentiments. You know, we got to change the world. We got to make it better. It's time to be free, you know? Overturn the established order. The music reflected, but really it was is zeitgeist the word, you know, of the time that was just so critical. There was a deep and profound change happening, and Leary was a central figure in that. And America was just paranoid, terrified of this man and the power he held over. I mean, the establishment was frightened. This is why this guy was, bam, busted time and again and locked up, you know, and discredited afterwards. So that's my interest. And I just love how all these various characters, you know, come together and interact and their paths cross. It just, nothing is more exciting to me than Leary doing a trip with Kerouac. It didn't end up well. Kerouac just said, yeah, so what? Kind of thing. He was already kind of twisted. There's a wonderful description of Kerouac at that point. He was already ruined at that point by alcohol and by the fame, which he was not able to handle. But Ginsberg remained faithful throughout. Maybe I'll just find that little bit. Yeah. As for Kerouac, whatever he was looking for, he didn't find in the other world or in this one. Fame had not proved an unguent for his problems. An unguent, UNGUENT. I gotta know that word. Indeed, it only exacerbated them. The reading public regularly confused Jack with Dean Moriarty, his Cassidy-like creation. They expected him to be a high-octane hipster, Not this alcoholic, manic depressive who's given to interminable boasting. "I'm king of the beatniks," he roared at Leary when Tim had arrived to the psilocybin. "I'm Francois Villon, the vagabond poet rogue of the open highway. Listen while I play you hot lick spiral improvisations from my tenor typewriter." But the fact was, the tenor typewriter was silent and had been for months. Leary found it depressing. It was his first bad trip. Later, when he asked Kerouac if he could publish a report of the session, Jack refused, although it would still be some time before he began comparing psychedelics with communist brainwashing. Yeah, that tragic, tragic end of Kerouac. But you see, his time was over. He had done his thing, and now it's Leary's time. Boys, girls, I want you to know that. You know, I really, if I had a better memory and was better organized, and if I was ever to do a presentation at, not PAB, but at a pod camp, I just wish I could do it on Leary. Anyway, that's what I'm going to leave you with today. Today is the day I promised myself I'm gonna opt out of the program. I'm gonna leave the teachers with it. I'm gonna take care of my business in the office, and I'm just gonna give this day to myself and share some of it with you. And that's what we've just done. And I'm still sitting on this point. The sun is beating down. The lake is beautiful. It's just surrounded. You see nothing but trees for the entire lake. Not a sign anywhere of the dreaded sea-dew. That poison, it's gone. So there you go. Talk to you a little bit later, okay? And bye for now. Good morning. it's a rainy day, and I just love it. We're at camp, you know, and you're hoping always for nice weather. We've had every day up till now. It's been beautiful. But we sort of knew it was coming. But there's something so beautiful about the rain, the sound of it, the sort of the coziness when you're inside. I'm standing in the entrance to a woodshed, right by one of the main fire pits. The girls are in the rec center. We have a beautiful indoor rec center. So they're supposed to be canoeing this morning. And the staff came up and said, doesn't look good for canoeing. And I said, well... And they had already booked the rec center, and I was actually kind of hoping it wasn't on the schedule that they would do it. They got these big bouncy balls. Like, it's a full sort of gymnasium-style ping pong tables. And there's a rock, a wall climbing room where you can just sort of climb and go, you know, right upside down from one wall to the other and along the sides. And they were just loving that. And bouncy ball soccer and... just all kinds of stuff indoors, and then, you know, making those little lace things, the craft stuff you do at camp. And it was just cozy being there, and it's all screened in, overlooking the lake. It's just a happy place for me. I was late coming. I stayed back in the room, and I made some comics with a very neat, cool comic app that I have for my iPad, and I take the pictures of the girls, and you add captions like awesome, cool, and then little speech bubbles or thought bubbles above their heads, and they just loved it, you know, with the staff and the girls, and like kind of fun, the geeky stuff. And I knew before I left, I gotta buy that app. Got a couple of them, and you can just email it or post it up on a Facebook page or whatever. Yeah, I'm just happy in the rain. And it hasn't dampened anybody's spirits. We've got another full day, so the canoeing we didn't do this morning, we can do tomorrow morning. And we'll just adjust. It's just wonderful being here at camp. The staff are terrific, and they're just into it. This is, you know, kind of a reward for them. I know I keep saying the same thing over and over again. It's just good. You know, I'm not perfect on this job. Like, I'm a bit shy. I don't know if it's shy or... I find it hard to make just small talk with a girl. So I can say, hi, good morning. You having a good day? Did you have fun today? But it's... their language isn't much further than that. And it's a little harder for me to, you know, go from there. But it doesn't really matter. That's not really my job. My job is to stand back, oversee, make sure the vibe is good, that everybody's happy. I did observe teaching lessons. I don't know if I mentioned this before or earlier. And I know there were some tips I might, maybe perhaps should have offered. But it's a balancing act, you know. Do you step in on somebody else's time and maybe make them feel awkward and uncomfortable? Or do you just let it ride and think, okay, make a note for next year, which I've done, you know. This is something we need to work on. It's kind of what I do because it's all long-term. You know, every year is unique and different. Every time we have slightly different staff configuration. Oh, ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to One Happy Dude. Even in the rain. And how I kind of almost laugh to think of people who curse the weather and, you know, complain or just be miserable. Hey, there ain't nothing you can do about it. The first step is surrender. It's raining, okay? Let's move on. What are we going to do? How are we going to make the most of this? And for people who just say, oh, my whole day is ruined, it's raining. Raining on your parade. Well, reconfigure your parade. I know, you're getting married. You want outside photos, you don't want pouring rain. Yeah, sure, there are disappointments, but come on, it is what it is. Adapt. Still loving the Leary book. Want to go back and read some more? Yeah, it's all good. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
There's action.
Yes, indeed. And it is another beautiful morning. As great as it was to have the rain yesterday, it was lovely when it stopped mid-afternoon. And last night I enjoyed one of undoubtedly my top 10 sunsets ever in a lifetime. And boys and girls, that's a lot of sunsets. I didn't have my recorder with me, or I would have possibly recorded, but even at the time I was kind of glad I didn't, so I could just have it. I did have a digital device. I did have my camera and took many, many, many pictures, which never quite do justice to the color of the sky, and doesn't capture the sound of the water at your feet. But it sure was beautiful, the moon rising, little crescent moon over the lake. Absolutely fabulous. And in the distance, in the far distance, a loon calling. And it's a very big lake, and so this loon would pop up at another, and you'd hear it from another further distance, a different cry, and then it would pop up somewhere else, and you'd hear it a little closer. It was just absolutely beautiful. And it was one of those, oh, I don't know, times that I was thinking so much about how do you hold this, knowing you can't hold it? What does it mean, this passing of time? I think it's because I'm reading about this wonderful book, Storming Heaven, about LSD and how Leary and so many others, it wasn't just him, but psychiatrists all over America found this to be a wonder drug for treating their patients. And the word got out and the government just clamped down. It said, bam, stop sending people. We're going to the medical field is going to license this stuff and take over and get it away from the therapists and the psychologists. Only psychiatrists should have access to it. And they really put the brakes on it. But at the time, those who were experiencing it and training people, you know, in Leary's formula of set and setting so that you would never have a bum trip. Leary started off, of course, in psilocybin. That's how they got all this going. And then discovered acid. And whoa. And it just, you can't help but think about the profound changes this was bringing and the amazement that a government would clamp down on mind expansion. And that's literally what they did. Anyway, so reflecting this, like, the experiences, so your mindset is life and the brain and an open consciousness and experiencing the moment and just being alive. And I guess as I read it, I connect back to my own experiences with acid and mushrooms. And it sort of makes you want to do it again. I don't think I'm ready for acid yet, but I definitely would be. Someday, ready for mushrooms. Oh, here come my girls. I'm up on the deck again looking out at those wonderful 3 Voyageur canoes. This morning, they changed the schedule, and this morning is canoe day for the girls paddling, and it's a beautiful day for it, and it's a real highlight of their experience here to get out in the canoes on the lake. I'm the odd man out, and I don't think I'll be joining them. I've done it every year I've been here, but today I just may pass and find my spot in the sun. The spot I found last night when I was having this very wonderful experience was, it's a point here on the on this coastline, shoreline, sorry. And it's just all rock leading right to the water, and you can get there and you're completely sort of cut off from everything. You're just sort of on the lake looking out. And as the sun went behind the hills and the sky started changing color, it was stunning. But I reflected a little bit on death, and not in a morbid way, but I did get word that a friend of mine from our early Vancouver days has terminal cancer at this point, and maybe he's got, and not in a hospital, he's out living at a barbecue, and so on, but he's probably got a matter of months. In fact, not probably. He has a matter of months to live. Anyway, makes you think about your own, of course, and how many more sunsets you will have, but you're not counting them. You're just, what you're thinking about is, okay, how do you, I don't know if maximize is the right word, but how do you make the most of each living moment of the time you've got, basically? What do you do to know that you're tuned in and you're experiencing it as fully as you can? There's the tie-in with the acid, because you're fully experiencing life. I remember that one trip I had with Glenn when we dropped our acid and started off at, I guess, Mr. Donut or whatever it was in Dorval, and headed off to the airport and eventually an abandoned railway yard for sunrise. And that feeling of, wow, give me 10 years of this and I'll die happily at the end of it. Knowing that was a dangerous thought, but that's the feeling, you know. This is really living. Why can't I live like this all the time? And it was sort of that feeling last night of, okay, I'm lying here. I'm on a rock. I'm looking at a gorgeous sunset. I'm hearing a loon. I'm watching those changes in the color in the sky. I'm excited to see this brilliant white crescent moon. In the distance, I can hear 34 girls and some camp staff laughing and singing. There's a moment when I felt bad having all this alone. Then why didn't I bring the others to this spot to see the beauty I saw? And then as I heard the laughter, I realized, no, they're doing something that to them is of the most value at that time. Talking with the Canadian staff, flirting with the one male counselor, singing silly songs, dancing. And that was the way it should be, and I was meant to be alone, having my moment. But again, it comes down to how do you can't hold it. How do you know in that moment that you're experiencing it as deeply and as fully and as richly and as strongly as possible? What do you have to do? And of course, part of it is letting go. Part of it is tuning in and not thinking about tomorrow or worrying about whether somebody else is seeing it with you or not. Part of it is just surrendering. Funny now, it's sort of gone. It's a memory, and in my mind, I knew I'd be telling you about it today. Because it just seems so wonderful. I guess there was a bigger picture, too. It made me think of my years. Like, I'm aware of... I'm not an old man, but I'm 63. You can't really call it old anymore. But certainly mature. And there was an overall good feeling about, here I am at this lake that I've been coming to since 1994. Doing this. And there have been so many changes in my role. And now here I am sort of in charge of this group. I feel like I've risen to some point. That maybe I was destined to. I feel very happy about that. The sound you may hear in the background is the girls below me getting their life preservers to get ready for the morning paddle. It's a happy sound. Yeah, there's just there's that wonderful feeling, and I think I'm also reflecting on the significance of the fact that next year marks our 20th year of doing this, the 20th year of tours. And the company that started off as a Kyrenia Canada, becoming Canadian Study Tours. And what that means to me, it's a very proud moment. It's a time I really want to celebrate in good fashion. I've already told myself I get to buy myself a nice digital camera, a Canon or a Nikon, so I can take better pictures to capture some of these experiences and share them with people. The goal, of course, will be to go through 25 years. Sorry. 25 years, which would make me, see, next year would be 24. Yeah, about 69. And I want to be doing this definitely when I'm 70. I want to be a 70-year-old man on that rock. I think that was one of my thoughts. That's a ways to go yet, and who knows if I'll make it, but or the company will make it. I mean, it could dissolve next year. Could be contract negotiations. Could be new principal decides, no, we're not going to do that. I mean, anything could fall apart, but I've already booked the dates to be at this camp, 2012. And I realize I used to bemoan the fact I've never had a cottage. My family never had a cottage. People get to take holidays, go up to the cottage for the summer, and yet I've been doing this for all that time, every summer, since 1994, I've come up to this place or once or twice. There's a substitute or a missing SARS year, but basically I've had this experience and it's been wonderful. So, enough said. I know I'm beginning to sound quite boring. So I guess I'll go down to the wharf and take some pictures of the girls heading out the canoe. It's a very exciting experience. It's quite beautiful. It's not peaceful the way you like to think canoeing would be. But it's there's a beauty and a wonder to it. We have a wonderful beach party this afternoon and a closing ceremony and talent show tonight. So it's a great, great, great day before heading on to the next part of this journey. So this will really, really be the winding down of the camping part of this series of podcasts, my study tour summers. And I'll begin another one probably from Ottawa. So, boys and girls, adieu, mon ami. Bye for now. I just wanted to add one further reflection on what I was trying to express before. It may sound so vague and confusing unless you're sort of tuned in to, understanding where I'm coming from. Maybe I've experienced acid and not just that, but if you're the type who ponders living, I think a lot of people don't. But I was talking about trying to hang on to that sunset in a way. And I wasn't really. I was enjoying the beauty of it. But while you're enjoying it, you want to stop that inner voice that says, even that says, this is beautiful. And have that sort of that nirvana-like consciousness that just, it is, you are at one with that sunset. It is now. It is this beauty and each finely discernible change. You're riding that wave. It's beauty in itself, and you don't have to stop at each point the way we stop it. There are digital media and cameras and capture it for later reflection, but as you're flowing through it, and the question arises now this morning as I sit back on the very same rock I was at last night, is that what we're supposed to be doing, trying to somehow hold on and understand the moment and feel the moment and experience the moment as it's happening fully and without desire for anything else, that surrender again, you know, of getting the ego out of the way and just being there. Is that enough? And of course it should be, but there's also a sense you want to attach meaning to it. You want to hold it. You want to give it purpose. You want to understand. You want to be able to do something with it. And those are all these extra hang-ups that, again, Leary and the others are talking about releasing, letting go of. And that Eastern philosophies, you know, aim to do some. But there's the other sort of counter to that is the totality. And I think last night I was able to see a little bit of the totality of your whole life. And where are you in your life? At what point are you in terms of satisfaction? And in my case, being here now with these girls doing this job and having everything going so well, it's just this tremendous feeling of, wow, in totality, everything is great and wonderful and I'm where I'm supposed to be, and the next time I will also be where I'm supposed to be, and for a while now I've been where I'm supposed to be, that sense. And again, I know this may sound absolutely like dribble, but surely that's what we're all trying to do with our lives. We want satisfaction. We want to get rid of this sense of wanting more or not being where we should be or striving, you know. And I do think some of it just comes with age and time. It's not necessarily what you've done. I mean, I look out at the water scene now. My God, the wind has taken these girls right across the lake. They've traveled a long distance, each in their own way, some just crashing into shore and others fighting for control of the canoe, but some just drifting and letting the current drive them. That's kind of nice too. But meanwhile, the staff is out too, the female counselors, Bean and Nisa in a canoe, just rounding up the girls, and Pete, the lone male of this trio, in a kayak, you know, did that perfect flip, you know, just turn it over and then just bobble right back up. They demonstrated when a canoe flips and you get out, how to right the canoe with the help of another and slide it up on top of that canoe and then hang on to the ends of the rescuer's canoe, and then the two ways of getting back in, the beached whale and the sliding turtle or something. It's just an amazing demonstration of people who have these skills. And, wow, I could never do that. That's just not me. And I think this is what I'm getting at. You've got to be comfortable with yourself as you are who you are. I'm not that guy. I'm not Pete in the kayak doing all this outdoor sort of macho type stuff. I'm the guy sitting back, reflecting, recording, reading, and just enjoying the moment. And I'm glad of the role I play. And I think there are stages in our lives when we're always comparing ourselves to somebody else who can do stuff we can't do, who's better, and shit, I can't be that, I can't be one of those guys. And I think the sooner you can let that go and say, no, but I can be me, you've got to admire a lot of people in the gay community who have the courage to come out and just say, hey, boom, this is the way I'm wired, this is me, take it or leave it, I don't care. And that's wonderful. It should be a lesson to more of us. This is who I am. My own embarrassment comes from the more I talk about it, the more it sounds like I'm bragging. I think that's the other thing. As I lay on that rock and I look back at my years working on the railway, going up to Prince George, living in the hostel, every fucking thing I've done in my life, heroic or not, I'm proud of it. I'm glad of it. I'm just glad I did that and took that path. I'm glad I was born the time I was born. Blah, 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 blah. I know. But really what I'm trying to say, I'm just using myself as an example, is you've got to do the same. Be yourself. Follow your path. Create your path. Blaze your trail if you're young enough to do it. Just don't let life beat you up and don't let other people dictate your life. I'm dealing with somebody here whose life seems totally controlled by external circumstances. And fuck, man. That's the message we've always given out on this Dixon James podcast. You take control. It's your life. I'll end there once again as I sit here on the rock reflecting about how beautiful this all is. Take care. Signing out. Just when I fish out the recorder, the loon stops calling. I'm on the deck at this lake. We've just finished our sort of talent show farewell goodbye night. The girls take hundreds of pictures of the staff here, who they've just grown so fond of, and the staff equally fond of the girls, and gifts and notes exchanged all around. It's really quite wonderful. Long talk with the director, and now I look out at the lake, and it's just another amazing sky. It's not like last night's at all with this red sunset. There's some clouds in the sky, and it's just given a different, more of a yellowish color to it, and the sky and the clouds reflected perfectly into the still lake. It's beautiful, but it's especially that sound of the loon that makes it all so damn nice, but you know, what do you do? Leave your recorder on for half an hour and go back later to check for loon calls. Yep, guess you're not going to get it. Sound of mosquitoes, little fuckers. No, that's it. Talk to you later. Bye.